All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
I was born with my papa's son wandering out and a smoking gun. Some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
Nick DiCilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of the Tribune Tower. And it's our Friday night show, which our new time slot, we're really thrilled about this. We started a little bit later now, but we're on at midnight, and we are live with you all through the night, baby. Live radio, live in the studio. We are here midnight to 5 a.m. every Friday night into Saturday morning and keeping you company. All of our Friday night features remain. The midnight movie reviews are about to start. We've got Drunks in the News, sponsored by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. I want to thank George. Had a great lunch on Thursday there. Actually, had a meeting with George and Patty Vasquez. We got an event coming up at Gale Street on July 30th, and we'll tell you all about that. We've also got Nick D. Show Spies, Straight Out of Context, and much, much more. We're going to keep you company all night long. Lots of fun topics. And keep your phone lines open. Call us up. You got to participate, man. We're going to be here all night long. We're going to keep you company and keep you entertained. The phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can also text us anytime you want. Send a text to 24720. Sign your name on those texts because we'll read them on the air. Send it to 24720. You can follow us on Twitter. But the best way to stay connected, along with over 8,600 fans, go to Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. So let's kick this off. It is a Friday night. We're here till 5, keeping you company live. And so let's get our regular features going. It is midnight. It is Friday. And that means it's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews with Eric and Colin. These themes, you know, it's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews every Friday night at midnight right here on the Nick DiCilio Show on WGN. Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and Eric Childress join me, and we talk about all the movies that are available for you to see in the movies, the big ones, the small ones, the art house films, and we also cover your options on demand. And there are a ton of films that are available and on demand before they even come out in theaters or the same day that they're released in theaters. And there's so many different ways to watch movies nowadays, and we try to cover them all for you as thoroughly as possible so that you can make your decisions. And you can always play this back on podcasts, by the way. You can get our full-length podcasts. You get information at WGNRadio.com. But in order to get them all, you got to go to iTunes to download them at iTunes. So go through iTunes and download all of the full-length podcasts. If you miss 1 second of this show, you can get them. And I know tons and tons of people download our podcasts, and so do it that way, and then that way you know which movies you can check out and which ones you want to avoid. All right, here we go. Here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
All righty then. So listen, I did not see Pacific Rim. It's the big movie of the week. We'll get to it later on. I did not see it. I slept like 26 minutes between tonight and today, and I ended up seeing like two movies, and so I and it didn't just the showtimes for Pacific Rim did not jibe with what time I had to get here and all that stuff. So I am going to see it on Monday. I'm going with a large group of people who are waiting to see it on Monday after it dies down over the weekend. And we're going to go see it in the big IMAX on Monday. So you guys can review that one a little bit later on, even though I got to tell you, I know that some people hate it, some people are loving it. I still can't wait to see it. I'm very excited about Pacific Rim. But Eric and Colin will review the big, giant, epic action film Pacific Rim. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But as always, we cover the on-demand movies. And so let's start with those. Eric, the first one is entitled Blood.
Yes.
Yes. Can you explain?
I can try.
All right.
It is a thriller charting the moral collapse of a police family. Two cop brothers smothered by the shadow of their former police chief father must investigate a crime they themselves have committed.
Ooh.
Strong cast, Paul Bettany, Mark Strong, Brian Cox.
Hmm.
So, I mean, if that cast intrigues you, that plot sounds possibly intriguing.
Yeah, they've been pushing it on. Actually, they've been pushing it on the Comcast On Demand pretty big.
Oh, they have. Okay.
Yeah, and British director,
mm-hmm.
Who's done a lot of British television. So
and did a film called The Awakening, a ghost story with Rebecca Hall and your boy McNulty.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, which I was not a big fan of that one.
Not a very good movie. Well, that's called Blood. If you want to, if you're into checking that one out, that's available on demand. All right, what do we got here? Coffee Town.
A website manager enlists the help of his two friends in order to convince the owners of his favorite coffee shop, which doubles as his office, not to turn their business into a bar.
Wait.
If you follow that.
Uh-huh. All right, so Dennis from Sunny is in this.
Yes.
Okay.
And I don't recognize him by name, but not.
No, that's Dennis.
Like,
that's,
oh yeah,
that's
okay.
That's Dennis from Sonny.
Yeah. So, yeah, Glenn Howerton.
Yes, he's in.
Also Steve Little from Eastbound and Down. Adrian Palicki, aka the Wonder Woman that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And Josh Groban.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm interested because Dennis is in it. But there's just something about the difference between one of the guys from Sonny is in a movie that kind of went straight to on demand.
Yeah.
And the other guy is in the biggest movie of the weekend.
So, well, the other guy's got a few movies that have had some success.
Yeah. No, so. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. So,
yeah.
All right. Coffee Town. If you've, Dennis from Sonny is in it. And Sonny is another one of those shows where I kind of refer to the characters with their names instead of their real.
Okay.
Like Sweet D is in the Heat. Sweet D's in the Heat.
Okay.
You know, do you watch Sonny?
Right.
Eric?
I don't watch it regularly.
Oh.
But I, like, about a year ago, I started catching up on it.
Yeah.
So I've seen like two seasons of it, and it's hilarious. It's great.
Colin, do you watch it?
Oh, yeah. I've actually just, like, started on back on. I've seen them all the seasons, but I've started back for some reason on season 3 this past couple weeks.
Yeah,
now it's just so brilliant.
It's hilarious.
It's
awesome.
It's
and you know what's it's moving to FXX.
Oh, is the second FX?
I saw Charlie. Charlie Day was on the Fallon show promoting the robot monster movie,
mm-hmm.
and he said that we're moving. It's the 9th season, and they're moving him to FXX.
So, no, I thought there was going to be a movie.
No, they. There's been talk about that for a long. I've actually had Glenn Howerton on the show. We had Glenn Howerton on the show, two years ago, Craig? Like 2 years and a half ago, something like that? And there was actually talk then, and that was a year and a half ago.
Okay.
So, anyway. All right, well, that's Coffee Town.
Yeah.
All right, and Crystal Ferry, Eric, if I remember correctly, did you review this when you were covering one of the film festivals for us?
Yes, the premiere at Sundance. This year.
Okay.
It was actually, I think it was like our opening night press screening, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
It's called Crystal Fairy, but it's now on the poster it's being referred to as Crystal Fairy and the Magical Cactus. Okay.
Now, was it called Crystal Fairy when you saw it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It was called Crystal Fairy.
Right.
It stars Michael Cera. In one of his many roles this year, where he's playing a real jerkwad.
Yeah, against type.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's playing
against type as himself in one of
exactly.
the movies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And it's Michael Cera and a group of friends that he's on vacation, not in Cuba, or, no, Chile, I'm sorry, in Chile. And he's on vacation, like the American gringo in Chile, and he goes on a road trip with a bunch of friends of his to find this, you know, well, to put it, not to find a point, a magical cactus.
A magical cactus.
That, yeah, that essentially right. If you, you know, you cut it up and you cook it the right way, it turns into one hell of a hallucinogenic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's one of those types of trips. And along the way, they meet sort of a free-spirited young lady named Crystal Fairy, played by Gabby Hoffman. And it's, you know, that's pretty much what the plot of the movie is. And, you know, they discover things about themselves along the way. But Michael Cera plays a very one-sided jerk who just wants to find this cactus at all costs.
Yeah.
And that's all it's about, is about him getting the cactus, cooking it up, and the 20 minutes of this movie is him cooking the cactus.
Uh-huh. that sounds fantastic.
I know. And it's, you know, some of it's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah's, you know, is fine in it. Gabby Hoffman is fine in it.
Does Gabby Hoffman choke on a hot dog at all?
She doesn't choke on a hot dog, but okay. She gets very, very naked.
Oh, really?
Very, very naked.
I can't. She's always going to be Field of Dreams choking on a hot dog to me, man. I don't know if I want to see her naked. Oh,
well,
man.
You know, they refer to her as Crystal Harry in the movie.
Hello.
I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
All right,
That's a joke in the movie.
This girl's choking to death. That's my.
it just hits her twice.
Yeah.
On the back.
Hits her twice on the back, and everything's fine. Yeah.
He's a doctor.
Yeah. And by the way, the size of the piece of hot dog
gigantic.
That she chokes on in Field of Dreams.
It's like a thumb.
It's like, what the hell? Chew, yeah. Little girl.
Hungry kid.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. All right. I don't know. We're going off track here, but.
Yeah. So yeah. So Crystal Fairy. I was not a
okay.
fan.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna take a quick break here. We'll go through the other on demands. The other ones, Eric, that you have listed that you've seen. I've seen two out of the three.
Okay.
So we'll go through the. Well, why don't we quickly go through Iceberg Slim Pimp? That's a documentary, right? About Iceberg Slim.
Yes, Iceberg Slim: Portrait of a Pimp is the full title, and yes, it's a documentary about. Iceberg Slim.
All right.
I know very little about.
Okay. I know a little bit about him, and I don't care.
Okay.
Pawn Shop Chronicles.
Pawn Shop Chronicles is a new film by Wayne Kramer, who gave us The Cooler and Running Scared with Paul Walker. And this is another film with a really good cast. Paul Walker, Matt Dillon, Brendan Fraser, Vincent D'Onofrio, Norman Reedus, Shy McBride, Elijah Wood. Lucas Haas, an incredible cast.
Yeah,
And it's basically it's a kind of an anthology story.
But also, hey, Todd from Boogie Nights is in this. I just
Thomas. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get that far down the
list.
Ashley Simpson is also in the film. Since we're going that far.
Like Thomas Jane is in it, for God's sake.
There you go.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry. But the plot is apparently three stories setting around eventually leading up to this pawn shop. Missing wedding ring leads to a wild goose chase involving meth addicts, skinheads, and an Elvis impersonator.
Now, listen, if it's half as crazy as Running Scared,
yeah,
it should be pretty nuts. And and the poster's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the IMDb page for Pawn Shop Chronicles, just look at the poster. That would be enough right there. All right. So there's,
yeah, I'm watching it.
I think I may end up popping this one in the old on demand as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is Revelation Road 2?
I have no freaking idea.
Okay,
it has no plot description. I had to look up the first movie. The first movie is called Revelation Road: The Beginning of the End. It still doesn't have a plot description. But the user review there, it says is just bad.
Now, so there's a sequel. By the way, it says this thing is actually going to be in theaters September 10th.
Yeah.
It's available on demand. Brian Bosworth is in it.
Brian Bosworth and Eric Roberts and Ray Wise.
Oh, my God.
And the sequel is called Revelation Road 2, The Sea of Glass and Fire, which sounds like it should be a Percy Jackson sequel. I don't.
I don't. Well.
I think we have to watch this.
Yeah. Revelation Road 2.
I love watching without watching the original, too.
Yeah, let's see if we're lost. But yeah. Brian Bosworth, man, you know, where the hell, I mean, was it Stone Cold, last movie he's made?
No, I think he's been in more video movies than Stone Cold.
All right, well, Stone Cold rules.
That's the only one he ever got released, I think.
Yeah, but I love Stone Cold. I love that movie.
Sure.
I think it's awesome.
Sure.
All right, we got some other on-demand movies. The other three on-demand movies that are available at home and you're on-demand are also today available in theaters, and we will give reviews for all of those, plus everything that's in theaters coming up right here, and your phone calls. Eric and Colin, hang on. The phone number, if you have questions or comments or reviews of movies, it's the Midnight Movie Reviews, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And it is midnight, it is Friday, and every Friday night it's the Midnight Movie Reviews. That's what happens right here in the Nick DiGilio Show, and it's going to continue to happen every Friday at midnight. The show now starts at midnight, goes till 5 a.m. We are joined by Colin Suter and Eric Childress, and we know tons of people go to the movies, and tons of people need advice on what is going to be out there. And now that there are so many avenues on how to watch movies, and you can watch them at home, you can watch them on demand, you can watch them in the theater, we covered all for you so that you know exactly what you want to see and what you don't want to see, and we answer your questions, and you can call in with your movie reviews as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Colin, and here is Eric. All right, guys, let's get back to the business. Okay, there are three other movies that are available on demand that are also now in theaters that you can see here in Chicago in a theater. And Eric, why don't you start out with The Look of Love, which I'm really, really interested in.
Yeah, The Look of Love is another film that I saw at Sundance this year, and it's another Michael Winterbottom film that stars Steve Coogan as Paul Raymond, who was a British entrepreneur, dealt a lot in a lot of, not the sex trade, but, you know, things like, you know, strip clubs and, you know, things of that nature. This film is a story about his life and how he got into that and how he involved his wife and his mistresses in all these various avenues that he was involved in. And it's a film that tries to kind of recapture that 24-hour party people.
Yeah, that's what the trailer seemed like to me, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not even close to as successful. This character, while it seems like it should be sort of rich, you know, for that, you know, sort of approach to the material, is just not as interesting. It's like we've seen stories about guys like this before, and his life is just not really not that interesting. It's not, the movie's not very funny. There's not really a whole lot to this guy and to his story and with his mistresses and with his daughter, played by Imogen Poots, and his wife is Anna Friel. It's a really good cast, but there's just not anything to this movie at all. It's really unfortunate.
That's too bad. That's too bad. Because, I, you know, Winterbottom, I think, is a really interesting director.
Can be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, obviously he's made a lot of varying movies. You know, he's gone all over the map, and I think some of his movies are just great. And, you know, him and Coogan with 24-Hour Party People.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of the best ones he's done.
Oh, absolutely. And Coogan is phenomenal in it. And I love I love Steve Coogan. I could watch that
guy. So do I.
I could watch that guy doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's awesome. All right, that's disappointing. Yeah. So The Look of Love, which, by the way, is only playing at the Gene Siskel Film Center. And the showtimes for tomorrow are... if you're interested in seeing it, 3 o'clock, 5, and 8:15. 3 o'clock, 5, and 8:15. But you can watch it anytime you want on demand. All right, you guys, hang on. We got a couple of more movies on demand and in the theaters to talk about, and we'll get to those and more right here on WGN. We got the news coming up next right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are reviewing the movies. It's Midnight Movie Review time. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're talking about all the new movies, and if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, covering all the on-demand movies, where you can just turn on your TV, you know, go to your menu board and pick a movie that you can see without even leaving your house. And we'll talk about all the movies that are available in theaters as well. Colin Suter and Eric Childress are with us from eFilmCritic.com. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Eric, tell us about... Killing Season.
Okay. This is a pretty, I mean, it's in theaters, but it may as well be a straight-to-video film with Robert De Niro and John Travolta.
Yeah, it's just at the River East.
Yeah,
it's just at one theater. It's in at the River. It's at the River.
Right. East. I didn't even know this film existed until I saw it, the video release a few weeks ago.
I didn't know it existed until I was going through the on demand, and,
uh-huh.
I saw it and went, "Well, I got to watch this."
Okay.
So,
well, it's a film that begins in the Bosnian War. And we don't see a whole lot that happens in the prologue, but we know that John Travolta plays a Serbian who was left for dead at the hands of an American firing squad, and the person that shot him is played by Robert De Niro. It is now present day. It's 18 years later after the war and the incident, and Travolta's character has tracked down De Niro's character, who is pretty much living in isolation in the woods, and he's going to exact his revenge. And after they get to know each other for a little while, it basically sort of becomes a sort of a version of the Most Dangerous Game with two kind of legendary actors. Okay. Yeah. I kind of wish the film was a little nuttier than it actually is.
Yeah.
Because the film actually does kind of play it straight. I mean, when you get, you know, sort of about, you know, 20, 25 minutes of them sort of hunting each other, and then it just kind of becomes a game of one person has the upmanship over the other, and who are we siding with, you know, the American, are we siding with the Serbian? And I guess De Niro and Travolta are kind of trying. You know, it doesn't seem like they're kind of phoning in. They actually seem like they kind of believe in the material. But it's just not very interesting. It's not very interesting as drama. It's not very interesting as action. It was directed by Mark Steven Johnson, who was responsible for Daredevil and Nick's favorite movie, Simon Birch, right?
God
yeah.
almighty.
Yeah.
I'm really amused looking at his IMDb page right now. I don't know if this shows up on everybody's IMDb page, but you know you're not doing very well when on your IMDb page under where it says related lists, you know, the people, users who create their own lists of their favorite movies or favorite directors.
Yeah.
And all the lists have to do with being the worst director ever. Like, here, it's my list of the worst directors, my list of the worst action directors, my list, you know, it's all related to Mark Steven Johnson, the writer of Jack Frost and Big Bully and Simon Birch and Daredevil.
Right.
And apparently the screenplay by Evan Daughtry, probably his first screenplay before he wrote Snow White and the Huntsman last year. But apparently this thing was on like the sort of like that legendary, you know, that blacklist. Like the screenplays, like the really good screenplay just can't be made.
Yeah.
And this was on it, the screenplay.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a really bad movie. You know, I mean, it doesn't. I guess they were trying, but trying in the way that De Niro outside of Silver Lining Playbook,
mm-hmm.
and Travolta have been trying for maybe the past 15 years, you know what I mean? And what trying in that regard is not a whole lot of trying. You didn't mention that Jess from Gilmore Girls is in this as well.
No, I was saving his appearance for another movie we're going to review.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so anyway, I mean, I watched it and I just thought it was dull and stupid and it's been done like 8,000 times, you know, before. The guys running around trying to track each other down in the woods bit.
Yeah.
That's been done 8,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And much better. One of my favorites of that genre is the Lee Marvin, Charles Bronson movie, Death Hunt.
Sure.
That one rules.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this has happened like 8,000 times. They've added nothing new to it. I was kind of stunned that... that this movie, I mean, watching it, I was just, as it went on, I was like, how does this exist?
Yeah.
How does this movie exist? How did this happen? And in what time frame did Travolta and De Niro decide that this would be a good thing to do?
Yeah, who sort of initiated this thing? Who's the one that sort of gave it the power to get it made? Because it had to have started with one of those guys. I'm probably going to guess maybe Travolta.
Yeah, probably.
Because he's got sort of the showier part. But I mean, you watch the two guys in this movie, and it sort of represents sort of like it kind of represents their careers in a way. It's sort of like the best and the worst you could possibly get from these guys.
Yeah.
But dull is the word.
It's dull.
It's not a movie I expected to be dull.
No, and it's absolutely dull. It is absolutely dull. It took me 5 hours to watch it.
Yeah.
Because I kept pausing it and going and doing something else and then coming back and watching it. So,
This Evan Daughtry, we can look forward to him. He wrote the screenplay for this Divergent film that's coming out that's being filmed in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Right now. And also the Michael Bay's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
This guy's getting work.
Good. Good for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us, since we haven't seen it, neither of us have seen it, tell us about this really critically acclaimed documentary called 20 Feet from Stardom.
All right. Well, yeah, this is a documentary about backup singers, singers who have sung, alongside Bruce Springsteen, Michael Jackson, Elton John, George Harrison, Ike and Tina Turner, U2, Rolling Stones, A-list singers, B-list singers, C-list singers. It's kind of about how these women make a living singing backup, and also about, how with these kinds of connections that they have, some try to forge a solo career, but then learn that, in order to make that happen and to make a living at it, you really have to be, as Bruce Springsteen says, an egomaniac and a narcissist, really driven 24 hours a day to promote yourself. And you either have that in you or you don't. The gold standard for these women seems to be Darlene Love, who used to make albums with Phil Spector, of course. And the movie chronicles their relationship and how, Spector completely screwed her over, as he did so many people. There's a great story here about how she went from, working, as a well-known singer, to after the whole Phil Spector thing, working a crappy day job and then pushing herself back into the spotlight. And, now, of course, she sings Christmas Baby Please Come Home every year on David Letterman.
Yep.
So she's doing okay. Not everybody in this business is that lucky. And the movie follows several narratives with these women and men. There's a couple of guys in here, too. And, how they live their lives now and where they came from. And it's almost structureless. The movie is almost structureless in its execution. It bounces around a lot, but never to a fault. It's never less than engaging and fascinating. It's well-researched. These lives are well-chronicled. You really get a feel for who these women are, and why they do what they do. Would have liked a little bit more on the role of backup singers today in the face of, technological advances, that have no need for such a thing in the studio, like Pro Tools and voice correction technology. The movie touches on that a little bit, would have liked a little bit more, but that's kind of being nitpicky here because, this is a fantastic documentary, all around. This has been an uncommonly rich year for music documentaries. As we discussed last week, and this one's my favorite. If you're a music fan, you have to go see it. It's pretty much a must. It's not something that's been, this is territory that hasn't really been covered that much in music documentaries, and it's really well worth the effort to seek it out and go see it. It's only playing at the Landmark Century and the Renaissance in Highland Park. Definitely check it out. Highly recommend it.
20 Feet from Stardom is the name of the movie. I'm really interested in seeing it. I looked up the director's credits, and he's done nothing but music documentaries.
Yeah, really? I actually haven't looked it up, but I mean, he's good. I mean, he there's one woman who talks about, you know, how she didn't appreciate, you know, sort of how backup singers are looked at as sex objects and everything. And then he calls her out and says, yeah, but you posed for Playboy.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, you got me there.
But some of the stuff that he's done, he's done a lot of TV documentary work. Like he worked on the biography series on the Biography Channel. He directed the episodes, The Women of Country Music, Ray Charles, Burt Bacharach, Lieber and Stoller, The Hitmakers, The Teens Who Stole Top Pop Music. He directed a documentary on Sam Phillips, on Brian Wilson, on Johnny Cash's America. He directed that. And so this guy has done nothing but music documentaries. That seems to be his expertise.
Yeah, well, you can tell he's been at it for a while when watching this movie. It's made by a pro who knows what he's doing.
All right, cool. 20 Feet from Stardom is what it's called at the Landmark Century Center Cinema in Chicago and at the Renaissance Landmark in Highland Park. All right, hang on. We got a couple more movies to talk about, one of them which is still also on demand, and then you got a couple of big releases that we have to talk about as well. That's all coming up right here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, movie question or comment. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we are reviewing the new movies as we do every week after midnight. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress live with us, and we're talking about all the big movies. And there's one more that's out in the movie theaters right now and on demand. In fact, it's actually a special. There's a special screening, special screenings this weekend at the Music Box of this movie. This is Jeff Garland's new movie. Great comedian, great writer, director, actor, and star of Curb Your Enthusiasm and many, many other things. Chicagoan as well. And the movie is being played at the Music Box. He appeared there at the 7:30 screening on Friday night, and he will be at the 7:30 p.m. screening at the Music Box on Saturday night to talk about the movie and do a Q&A afterwards. He co-wrote it and directed it. He's also in it. Eric, why don't you give us the details on Dealing with Idiots?
Okay. In the film, Jeff Garland plays Max Morris, a very well-known comedian who spends a lot of his time at the Little League ballpark where his son plays baseball. He hangs around with a lot of the parents, a lot of them played by a lot of close friends of his, including Fred Willard and Kerry Kinney and Gina Gershon, and Bob Odenkirk plays the coach of the team. And as he sort of discovers sort of the nuttiness, or at least becomes more aware of the nuttiness of the parents of these kids, he decides that he's going to interview them sort of one-on-one to decide if he wants to maybe make a movie about them. Okay, that's the basic plot of the movie, and that in many ways that's kind of what the movie feels like. It feels like a well-known comedian interviewing friends of his to maybe kind of make a movie, because that's what this is. It's maybe kind of like a movie, but at times a very funny one. This is as random and almost directionless, as Colin put it, a film that I've seen in some time. But when you have sort of, you have Jeff Garland, and then you just have him just able to sort of stand around, watch J.B. Smoove, you know, sort of command, a backyard session, just riff session and whatnot, or Fred Willard or Odenkirk, some of the stuff is just really, really funny. It doesn't really amount to much. It leads up to a very, very weird climax, but you know, for what it is, and if you just want to see some very funny people doing some very funny riffing on each other while Jeff Garland just kind of stands around and lets them do it, you can certainly do a hell of a lot worse than this movie. It's not as formed as his previous directorial debut, I Just Want Someone to Eat Cheese With, which was quite a good movie. This one's just kind of randomly very funny. And in a year where comedy is sparse, that's okay by me.
Colin, did you see it?
I did not see it yet.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought this movie was hilarious. Yeah, and I agree with everything you said. It's not much of a movie at all.
No,
it's just like I've got a bunch.
It's not
of...
even really what the movie is about either.
Yeah,
like, I thought it was going to be about like nutty, you know, little league parents.
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of is. But it's, you know, clearly Garland had to have been inspired by, you know, taking his kid to little league.
I mean, he
had to be. And
right.
I don't know, and the characters, because, I mean, the setup is he's playing a character not far from himself. His name is
right.
Max Morris in the movie, but he could be Jeff Garland.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I mean, my question, and I would love to ask Jeff Garland this question, and we couldn't book him. He was too busy to come on the show. But, like, how much of this is based, how many of these people are based on reality?
I know.
Like, I mean, first of all, Odenkirk has not been this funny in a long time.
You're absolutely right.
I think Odenkirk's the funniest thing in the movie. And I love Bill Odenkirk, but he's been kind of on a dry spell and kind of says yes to everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But man, he's got a scene in his coffee shop where he's like, it's like his domain that
yeah.
I was almost peeing myself. I was laughing so hard. And there are just so many great characters in this movie. The most ridiculous umpire since Leslie Nielsen,
mm-hmm.
in Naked Gun.
Yeah.
And Kerry Kenny and Gina Gershon are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's Steve Agee. He has placed this character who just kind of stands around with a notebook.
The numbers cruncher, yeah, represents the numbers, the number crunchers of baseball.
And like everything he says is so nasty, and like his first appearance where he's screaming at his own son,
yes,
it kills me. You mentioned the scene with J.B. Smoove,
yep.
and the rest of the people just sitting around.
The drunk girl, the two drunk girls that are there,
yeah,
hilarious.
Oh God, what's the one girl who? Oh man, okay, you know what? I have to look her up. The girl who plays, Natasha Leggero,
yeah.
Natasha Leggero. She's the one who hasn't written anything in her book.
Yes.
And she's the, why don't you make friends with me on Facebook? That one.
Yes.
She's unbelievably funny in that
hilarious.
Scene too. Ian Gomez is in this as Commissioner Gordon. There's just an obvious
right.
and funny bit there.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Kind is awesome in this movie.
Jamie Gertz.
And he's married to Jamie Gertz, who's hysterical in this.
Yeah. And who plays his father?
Timothy Oliphant plays his
yes.
father. And Colin, we should explain. It's sort of these flashbacks that he has, like this. His father's passed away, and he has conversations uh-huh. with his father while they're sitting in the bleachers at the Little League games, and they're fantasy sequences. And, yeah, it's got a very weird ending, and the final shot goes on way too long.
Too long.
to the point where I think it might have been on purpose so that the audience feels a little uncomfortable
yeah.
watching these people dancing around. You know what I mean? I was like, what the hell? Why is this take 3 minutes too long?
Right.
And Garland gets off a few good ones in there. I mean, he's mostly straight man, but he's got some great singers in it. Yeah, clearly this was just a lark.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It was like Garland said, look, I've got an unbelievable amount of very funny and talented friends, and I'm going to get a camera and just do it.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, for me, it seemed a lot, it reminded me a lot of This Is the End, except like with one quarter of a third of an eighth of the budget.
Right. Yeah, no, very much.
And I thought this one, to me, was much funnier. You know what I mean? I like these people more than I like the people in the other movie. That's probably what it is.
Well, it certainly has the best Will Smith joke of the year.
Oh, my God.
Kerry Kenny's Will Smith line destroyed me.
That was just absolutely hilarious. Yeah, no, there's great stuff in it. And I just laughed throughout the whole thing. I really did. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you're going to, you could nitpick this thing to death as a piece of cinema.
No, that's what I said. I don't care. It's like I laughed, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I, that's enough for me. I laughed hard.
I did too. And it's not. I mean, it's clearly not as good technically a film as I Want Somebody to Eat Cheese With.
Which is kind of a really nice little special little movie.
A beautiful movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this is. I thought it was hilarious. And if you can get tickets to go to the 7:30 show at the Music Box with Jeff Garland there, I'm sure it'll be awesome. It's playing at the Music Box. Jeff Garland is going to be there tomorrow at 7:30, but there are other show times and during the week and stuff. But it's available on demand. That's how I watched it, and I watched it tonight. And I'm still laughing about it, so that should say something. All right. Okay, we got a couple of big ones here to talk about coming up, and we will be doing that after the news. Hang on, Colin. Hang on, Eric. And yes, it is the Midnight Movie Reviews.
Silent movie evening, shooting flickers of light in the skies over.
Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Yes, our Friday night show now, the overnight show. It now starts at midnight, goes all the way through till 5 a.m. live radio on WGN. We'll be here till 5, keeping you company. We're going to have some fun topics to talk about. We'll open up those phone lines. They're open now. We want you to participate. You can participate by calling 312-981-7200. Give us a call. You can also send your texts anytime you want. Send your text to 24720. Sign your name to those texts to 24720 and also facebook.com/Nick D Show. You can leave your comments there as well. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric are here, and we've got some more movies to talk about, so let's do that. Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Pacific Rim, and then you and Eric can review this movie that I have not had a chance to see. I'm looking forward to, and I will see it on Monday. But Colin, tell us about Pacific Rim.
All right. Well, this is yet another futuristic, sort of apocalyptic summer blockbuster. This one dealing with gigantic monsters and equally gigantic robots. The monsters, which are called, I think they're called Kaiju, something like that, these monsters came from the Pacific some years back. And the military found that fighting them caused way too many casualties, so they designed robots called Jaeger that equaled the size and presumably caused less casualties in a fight, although you'd never know it from watching this movie because it contains 10 times as much destruction as Man of Steel. Anyway, these robots are controlled. Each one of these big robots are controlled by two people who are specially trained to work such machinery, but who also operate it through a merging of their minds. Each mind controls a robot, and their memories and their ability to deal with those memories emotionally figures into the operation, which of course eventually causes problems down the road with a couple of the main characters. Charlie Hunnam plays the hero whose brother died a long time ago in a battle with these things. The lovely Rinko Kikuchi plays his love interest, whose past with the monsters kind of haunts her. There's some nepotism between a father and a son in this league of robot fighters, and Charlie Day of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia plays a scientist who is obsessed with learning more about the monsters, what makes them vulnerable, how their brains work, and of course, how to possibly destroy them by going to the main source of their existence. And the story kind of bounces back and forth between America and Tokyo. So this is from Guillermo del Toro, and this is certainly his biggest movie in terms of scale and scope, and it is an unabashed monster movie, in many ways in the tradition of an old Godzilla movie. That's what it wants to be on a purely escapist level, but it also has, I think, a nice emotional center. Doesn't get shortchanged as one might expect in something like this. I like these characters. I like that there is a real attempt to tell a story here, and there's a degree of intelligence here that makes it more interesting than your usual summer fare. We're so used to saying, it's big and dumb, but I enjoyed it. It's kind of nice for a change to say it's big and actually kind of intelligent, and yeah, I enjoyed it.
And I thought the fight scenes, for the most part, were beautifully put together. I think it has a good sense of humor, you know, and it's not winking at the audience or apologizing for being, you know, a big robot versus monster movie. While it is, you know, certainly on the same, you know, budget and scale as a Transformers movie, it's not crass, it's not patronizing, and it actually, you know, has a bit of a soul. You can nitpick it to death, sure, just like any movie like this. But I was surprised at how much I really enjoyed it. I had a good time with this movie.
Okay, and I kind of already know where Eric is on this one. So, and I know that
you do too,
Kyle. Yeah. All right, I can't say anything. I'm going to see it on Monday, and I got to tell you something. I'm still, like, jacked to see this movie big time. All right, Eric, go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm not going to nitpick this movie to death. I'm going to get right to the heart of the matter. The action sequences in this movie are pretty terrible, actually. And the problem with the action sequences are the problems that we've had with a lot of action sequences, not just this summer, but for many, many years now, is that the filmmakers have this penchant for some reason to put the camera up as close as possible to the action. In some cases, like the Bourne movies, it works. Some of the Nolan stuff, I think it works sometimes. But for the most part, when you have robots, giant monsters, you kind of want to be able to see what's going on. You kind of want to be able to see where these things are punching each other, where they are in relation to one another. They don't exactly move at the speed of light. So the move, you know, these things are already in their own sort of version of slow motion, so you don't even really need that. But for some reason, Del Toro films about 80% of this film at night, about 80% of it in water. So not only is it at night and it's dark, but there's water splashing all over the place. So in turn, you got right up there, up next to the exoskeletons, and punches being thrown, and water is being thrown in your face too, and all this stuff. Especially in IMAX 3D, which is where they screened the film for us earlier this week. I haven't taken my 3D glasses off that much ever. I've probably at least a dozen times in the movie just to check levels of brightness, just to check to see if the 3D was causing any distortion with the action. That's the biggest problem with this movie for me. I mean, that's all this film needed to succeed, is to deliver on the robots versus the monsters, and it doesn't. As far as then getting into the emotional connection in the movie, between this and Fast and the Furious and that surfer movie coming out with Sam Worthington, I don't want to hear the word drift ever again. I think Rinko Kikuchi is borderline terrible in this film, I wish that the film had spent more time with some of the supporting characters. I wish the film was more centered around Charlie Day and his sort of squabbling counterpart, and also a character, a black marketeer, who people probably know who it is, but I won't spoil it for them if they don't. A black marketeer that they come and encounter with, who's got some things going for him. I've never been a fan of Del Toro. Del Toro to me has always been sort of like the poor man's Tarantino. I know he's been doing movies longer than Tarantino, but when Tarantino homages and steals stuff, he takes them and sort of puts his own spin on them. Del Toro is sort of like that 6-year-old boy who watches Star Wars, takes his action figures, punches them around, and but doesn't really come up with anything new. He just sort of uses the stuff that he's seen before. And like I said, if this film had delivered on the robots versus monsters, I don't see how people are giving the movie a pass with these action sequences, which I think are pretty terrible in their own way. And there's also something sort of hypocritical with all the complaints that came in about the conclusion of Man of Steel and sort of the potential for loss of life and the main destruction going on around it. There's a real sort of sense or a lack of sense in sort of the potential of loss of human life. I know that there are some underground bunkers that they create in this movie, and there's one scene where they shove as many people as possible into it, but that still doesn't really makes sense that, you know, all this destruction is happening, and when the action does move out of the water into the cities, and there's no real sense of any true danger for anyone in this movie. I think this movie is a pretty big fail, and I don't know why people are giving it a pass.
Wow. All right.
All right. Well, let me just address a couple things. One, I didn't see it in 3D IMAX. I saw it in 2D, no, you know, regular screen. So I had no problem following the action at all. As far as, you know, talking about, bringing up the loss of life issue on this film versus Man of Steel, my problem with it in Man of Steel is that it's Superman helping to cause the destruction instead of taking the battle away from the city to alleviate the loss of life. In this movie, it didn't bother me at all, because these robots and all these, you know, these monsters, they've sort of become a way of life in this world, and everybody knows it's kind of, you know, part of the deal with these, with these robots, you know, defending the land against these monsters. People are going to get caught in the crossfire regardless. And that's just kind of how it is in a big monster movie. But when it comes to a character like Superman, it bugs me that a character like Superman, you know, helps to cause the destruction instead of helping, you know, instead of trying to alleviate it. That's where it bugs me. I don't think it's, you know, that.
Well, that's certainly an added. That's an additional problem in Superman. I completely agree with you, Colin. I'm just saying that. I mean, there's really only I only remember even sort of one scene in the movie. It involves Charlie Day, where there are even people sort of being evacuated in any way. It's just sort of like, I mean, a lot of the action takes place over the water, but it doesn't, I mean, even the main characters, that didn't even seem a connection with me that I cared, who was being put in harm's way at all. You know, that's just me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the main characters are sort of interchangeable.
Do you think that there's, that it might just be a bigger problem seeing this movie on a bigger screen? Maybe less is more in this case, you know?
We can only review the movies that we saw. I took my 3D glasses off many times to sort of see if that, was an issue. And maybe one or two shots, I can notice that there seemed to be a little bit more of a scope issue involved. But of course, then I was looking at something blurry. I mean, there are beautiful looking shots in this movie. They're very, I mean, especially in 3D. The giant warehouses where they have the Jaegers or Jaegers or whatever they're called, the big monsters and the 25 stories. It's really kind of breathtaking to look at. I just wish that a director who cared more than just sort of putting two, giant things in a bathtub and making them splash around for a bit.
I don't know what to say because I haven't seen it or anything yet, but I will say this. The group of people I'm going with, we have tickets for Monday night in IMAX 3D. So I'm going to see it the way that Eric saw it. So I don't know. I don't know what to think now. But I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I like, I grew up watching the big. Now, did you guys growing up, did you like Godzilla and did you like all the big monster movies when you were growing up? Or is that something that you guys didn't watch, Eric?
No, I mean, anything that was big, giant, and, just destructing anything. I don't know whether it was a giant monster or a spaceship or whatever. I loved all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see all of the Godzilla movies, but I see some sort of version of them on television, certainly.
Yeah. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, when I was a kid, they weren't running them on television as much as, you would think, or at least I didn't catch them that much. I didn't start watching them until later on, like in middle school, when I started, me and a friend of mine, we started getting interested in, like, old B-movies from the 50s and 60s.
I will say this, and I think this is true. I just turned 48, and I think that's the wheelhouse age for seeing as many Godzilla movies as possible on television. I think people who are around 50, I would say between 40 and 50, that, like that, right around that age, but later, I think later, I think we had more of an opportunity to see Godzilla movies, honest to God, every Saturday and Sunday. And all of them. Like every Saturday afternoon, there'd be like two Godzilla movies. Like I saw, I think I'm not going to say I've seen every one of them. Every one of them that was available on American television, I saw dozens of times and loved them all.
Yeah. I was catching up on like science fiction movies at that time. You know, like War of the Worlds was a favorite movie of mine at the time. So any, you know, anytime you have, you know, alien creatures of any kind destroying a giant city, I was down for
See, that was like right around when I was a really young kid is when I first became obsessed, you know, with horror movies, you know, starting out with the Universal. We've talked all about this. Starting out with the Universal movies and the Hammer movies, and right around that time period where I became obsessed with horror, and I'm talking at a really young age, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. That's when I first started seeing the big Japanese monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shown a lot at that time period. And I'm talking about, you know, late 60s, early 70s, into the mid 70s. They were constantly being shown, along with like creature features and things like that. So it's part of my, it's one of those deals where this is the kind of movie that is absolutely an homage to a big part of my childhood, which is one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to it so much. So, I don't know. All right, well, and I'm a fan of Del Toro, by the way, Eric. I know you're not.
Yeah, I know you are.
I mean, I'm a big fan of his movies, and I think he can go back between art films and things like that. I still think Devil's Backbone is a phenomenal film, one of my maybe my favorite of all of his movies. And I still think Hellboy 2 is great. I think Hellboy 2 is a terrific action movie. I like Blade 2 as well. Hellboy I had issues with. Pan's Labyrinth I like, but I think it's overrated. But yeah, I mean, overall, I love Mimic. I think Mimic is a blast. So I don't know. I hope this is, you know, I'm just kind of worried because I'm not a big 3D guy. You know that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm outnumbered. Mm-hmm. It's not a democracy. You know what I mean? Well, it is, I guess it is a democracy and I lost. So we are in fact going to see it on the big IMAX 3D screen. And I would rather not, that's just not, I mean, you guys know how I feel about 3D.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't ruin the experience. If I like it, and maybe the 3D kind of mars it for me, I'll definitely go back and see it in 2D just to see, you know, just to see the difference. But so, all right, guys, hang on. We got another movie to talk about here.
"Quote unquote."
Yeah. Okay.
Only Eric has to talk about it, though. I haven't seen it.
Oh, Colin, you haven't seen it? Okay, hang on, Colin and Eric. Okay, you've seen it. I've seen it. We're going to talk about it. All right. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews, and we're going to get on with it some more. You guys, you want to jump in with questions or comments? If you went to go see Pacific Rim or any of the other movies that are out this summer and you got your own opinions and just a question or a comment, wondering about something movie-related, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Oh, yeah. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews, and if you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are here live till 5 a.m. every Friday into Saturday mornings now from now on. We start at midnight. We go to 5 a.m. It's live radio all night long. I'm here keeping you company. Please participate with us. We got some great topics and some fun stuff coming up and great things planned. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, facebook.com/NickDShow. Also, I just want to mention very quickly that tomorrow – I should say tonight, Saturday night, we are normally on 6 p.m. to midnight. So our shows on the weekends from now on are midnight to 5 a.m. and Saturday night from 6 p.m. to midnight. There is a Cub game tomorrow night, so we're going to follow the Cub game at 10 o'clock, and we are going to be on all night. It's a super-sized Nick D show tomorrow night. We start at 10 p.m. We go till 5 a.m. Sunday morning. That's 7 hours of fun. We got some great guests lined up and some unbelievable topics. We're going to keep you company from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Sunday morning. There you go. And then I'm going to be back again Sunday night into Monday morning, 1 a.m. late Sunday night into Monday morning at 6 a.m. filling in for Bill Leff. So lots of overnight stuff, late night tonight, obviously, you turn the radio on, here I am. Same thing tomorrow night. If you're up late Saturday night and Sunday night into Monday morning, turn the radio on, you're going to hear me. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And also, you can also check out our podcasts at WGNRadio.com. Full-length podcasts are available through iTunes. So you go to iTunes and you can get the podcasts there. We will have all of our shows, full-length shows, available through iTunes. But you can get your information at WGNradio.com for scheduling and all kinds of cool stuff. We're going to get back to the movie reviews. We're going to go to the newsroom in a couple of minutes here. But we got some phone lines open. If you want to jump in here, you got a movie review, a movie question. Big summer movies are out right now. And we've got one more big summer movie that came out this weekend to talk to you about, a big sequel. Yet another sequel that's out in movie theaters right now. And if you got a question or a comment, call us at 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll go to the newsroom and then back to finish up the midnight movie reviews. And by the way, Drunks in the News coming up in the next half hour, sponsored by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park. My thanks to George for being such a great guy and sponsoring Drunks in the News at the Gale Street Inn. We got Nick D Show Spies and Straight Out of Context. All that and more right here on WGN, so stay tuned. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard of. Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in studio, the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're wrapping up the midnight movie reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com. We take care of all the on-demand options for you to watch in the comfort of your own home before they even come out in theaters, and also all the big ones and all the little ones that are in theaters right now. And Eric and Colin, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All righty, then. All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Grown-ups 2.
Yeah. It's here,
yes,
finally.
Yes, we've been waiting 3 years.
3 years, yes. For the sequel to Grown Ups.
Yes.
One of Adam Sandler's biggest hits, with almost the entire cast returns, him and Kevin James and Chris Rock and David Spade. Only missing his time is Rob Schneider, who was given no explanation why his character is not in the movie. But rest assured, you Rob Schneider fans, don't worry. They have not left you hanging. They have pretty much replaced him with Nick Swardson.
Yep.
So here you go. What's to say about this movie? I could try to give you a plot. It's, I guess, a few years down the road from the previous film, and they sort of moved or somewhere within their original hometown. They're a little bit older, not very much wiser. They're all going through certain things in their lives. Kevin James is hiding from his wife at his mother's house. David Spade has discovered he has a teenage son from one of his many marriages. Chris Rock is dealing with the possibility that his oldest daughter might be dating now. I don't even remember what Adam Sandler's issue in the movie is, that Salma Hayek may or may not be pregnant again.
That and the fact that they've moved from their luxurious lifestyle back to the hometown.
Right.
And there's that adjustment, and
yes.
That's an issue.
Yes.
She wants kids. She wants kids, and he doesn't really, and she might want one. They're now living in his old town and all this other crap. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you were paying attention. but the sort of the if there is sort of a theme to the movie, it's the idea of sort of of bullies. I guess this is a movie actually going to take on the subject of bullying, and these guys, were sort of bullied as teenagers, and now they're seeing some of their kids go through some of the stuff, and they even get bullied a little bit themselves by the local frat boys. A couple of them played by Taylor Lautner and Jess from Golden Girls.
Gilmore Girls.
Oh God! See what this movie did to me today? Oh my gosh! So we've used the term directionless twice tonight.
Yeah.
No film does it fit bigger in than this one. This is one of the worst films in the Sandler canon,
and that's
saying something.
That's absolutely saying something.
Yeah. I think the only film worse than this is Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, which is bad on a whole different kind of level. This doesn't even qualify as a movie. It really doesn't. I mean, if Sandler and these guys really wanted to sort of take on the subject of bullying, then, you know, go with it. You know, make that the topic of your movie. You know, it might not work. It might be stupid and juvenile, but at least just go with it. Don't make it 15 minutes of your movie and fill the rest with, you know, jokes about deer urination and, you know, ice cream poop and stuff like that and Nick Swardson.
Yeah.
Go with it. You know, try and do something, for God's sake.
Do you realize, by the way, that you've said a title of an Adam Sandler movie three times in that sentence?
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Did I really?
Yeah, just go with
just
it.
Just go with it. Just go with it. Oh, man. This film is worse than that. At least that had Jennifer Aniston in a bikini, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, the first movie is not good. It is not good in any real respect. But at least the film seemed to have a through line. It seemed to have a plot. You know, them honoring their basketball coach and going back and just sort of, you know, getting the chance to be juveniles and revisiting their past for, you know, a weekend and whatnot. There's a thin plot, but at least it's a plot. There's nothing going on in this movie. It is so completely random and awful and unfunny. Okay, Chris Rock has one funny line about Eminem. I laughed at that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in this movie is absolute garbage. I wish there was a doctor out there who could give Adam Sandler a shame transplant, because people dishing out money for this, and there are a lot of children at the screening I went to today, parents taking their kids to see this movie, because the ultimate message of this movie is that if you are bullied or you are being bullied, stand up to your bully, challenge him to a fight, and in worst case scenario, have a Braveheart style massacre at your 80s theme party.
Right.
Because that's how this movie ends, with a gigantic massacre between elder adults, their teenage children, their young children, and the local frat boys who are looking to just punch anything that gets in their way. This is the worst film of the summer, maybe the worst film of the year.
Wow. You know, I still think, you know, and this is, it's crap. There's no question about it. And I knew it was going to be crap, but, you know, the minute that I even heard that they were going to be making it, I thought the first one was terrible. I was sitting next to you during the screening of the first one,
mm-hmm.
and you laughed a little bit, and I was just kind of, a couple times. And I think I laughed maybe once or twice. The line that you mentioned that Chris Rock has, I thought was pretty funny. I guess that's about it. I smiled a couple of times here and there, but for the most part, and everybody's in this movie. He got everybody in this.
Everybody.
I mean, everybody is in this movie. And so many really funny, talented people just show up, you know. I mean, Sherry O'Terry's in this movie, for God's sake,
mm-hmm.
you know. They're given nothing to do. Seeing, you know, like somebody like Maya Rudolph in material this bad is just depressing. Maria Bello, too, who I think is great.
They should be just as ashamed.
Oh, I mean, obviously the paycheck was massive mm-hmm. on this movie. It wasn't just a massive paycheck. Basically, it was just them screwing around for whatever, how long it ever took, 2 months to shoot this movie. They got a nice summer vacation out of it.
Mm-hmm.
A huge paycheck. It's just crass. It's crap. I got to say, though. In the canon of the Adam Sandler movies, and see, comparing these movies is just so ridiculous. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
It's just like picking what would you rather have: needles stuck in your eyes or your fingernails ripped out. That's sort of the question we're asking. I don't think it's as bad as that. The Andy Samberg is my kid movie. I don't think it's as bad as that.
That's my boy.
Yeah, I don't think it's as bad as that. That one, mm-hmm. I think that's the pinnacle of crap of the Adam Sandler with the Chuck movie that pronounced you Chuck and whatever.
Yeah.
That's second on the list of crap. This is like third, fourth, or something like that. But that Andy Samberg movie, that's my boy. That was unbelievable. I will say this is worse than Jack and Jill. Because Pacino's not
Pacino's
in it.
Pacino's funny in that.
Yeah, yeah. So you laugh a little bit in Jack and Jill, despite the fact that that's a piece of crap too.
Right.
His movies have gotten so bad that I'm like I don't want to admit that I liked Happy Gilmore.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to admit that I liked Billy Madison. I don't want to admit that I liked The Wedding Singer.
Yeah, it's like, how far do you want to go back on the Adam Sandler? You know, we're not, obviously, we're not talking about Punch Drunk Love or Spanglish, or even, I know you don't like funny people, but you know, those are like the three movies that I think are really great.
Yeah, and even that, even the, I'll even take the movie where his family died in 9/11 with Don Cheadle.
Oh, wait, Rain Over
I'll,
Me?
I'll take that. I'll ta- it's
like
not
that.
It's not good, but I'll take it over this crap. You know?
Certainly. It's better than this.
Yeah.
I took the liberty of, on and you see it on my Facebook page, of ranking all of the Adam Sandler movies tonight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. All the, like, since Billy Madison, 95 on, I took the liberty of, and I haven't seen A Crazy Nights. I still haven't seen Hotel Transylvania. But I'm just talking about, like, the Adam Sandler movies, both the comedies and the dramas, and I ranked them all.
A Crazy Nights should be up near the top. Of crap.
Okay, which I haven't seen. Let me,
Colin, you've seen Eight Crazy Nights, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's brutal.
I mean, this is why I didn't go to this movie. Adam Sandler is on my Tyler Perry list. You know, like, people, I'm just not even going to bother anymore. There's no point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I'm done. I've had it. No more.
Yeah.
Good list.
No more.
Yeah. No more.
Well, all right. So, yeah, I mean, this is obviously a horrible movie, one of the worst of the year. There's no question about it. And I think that the people involved in this movie should be embarrassed. It's, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's bad. It's real bad. Nobody
seems to be trying.
Yeah, no. Where is your list here? Is it on?
If you go to my Facebook page,
it's
probably one of my. It's probably the last thing I posted.
Is it?
Actually, I think it's just.
Hold on.
Sandler films, best to worst.
Okay, wait, Craig. Craig's printing it for me. Printing it for me. All right, we're gonna get that in a second here.
Top 25 list.
It's a top 25 Adam Sandler movie list. While we're getting that list, what do we got next week? We got The Conjuring, right? Next week.
Oh, we got The Conjuring next week. We have Red 2 next week. We have Turbo.
Okay.
We have RIPD, not getting a big advance screening from critics, so beware of that one. The new Ryan Gosling, Nicholas Winding Refn film.
That opens next week?
That's next week.
Jeez, I thought that was in August.
Yeah, no, it's next week.
Okay, they screened that today, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. Only God Forgives.
Yeah,
week.
Okay. All right.
And what else I'm looking? There's a new, new Kristen Wiig film comes out, Girl Most Likely.
Wow.
Yeah, Fruitvale Station, a big Sundance film next week.
All right, cool. Fruitvale Station, I'm really curious about. I'm going to sub with these. So, all right, well, let's go through these and see what we got here. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll do this. We got Drunks in the News coming up, which is sponsored by the Gale Street Inn. I want to mention that because it's a sponsorship, and George is my main man, and I want to thank you guys. Hang on, okay? We're going to do some Adam Sandler talk. Hang on. Colin, hang on. Eric, hang on. Colin, get your opinions ready. Go through the filmography as we're going to break here, and we're going to go through the Adam Sandler collection. If you want to join us with this Adam Sandler talk, please give us a call at 312-981-7200. Eric has ranked the Adam Sandler movies from best to worst. And we're going to check that out. If you want to discuss Adam Sandler and how bad his movies are, let's jump in here. We're going to have some fun here. 312-981-7200. And don't worry about it. We're going to get to Straight Out of Context. We're going to tell you how you can become involved in a lot of the stuff that happens on the regular edition of the Friday Night Show. And Drunks in the News, which is brought to you by the Gale Street Inn. My thanks to George for a fantastic lunch. Me and Patty Vasquez and George sat down and talked about this great event that we're going to be doing together at Gale Street Inn. We had a great lunch on Thursday, and George is awesome. Go to the Gale Street Inn, tell him Nick sent you, and say hi to George, and thank him for sponsoring Drunks in the News. Quick break, and we'll come back and analyze the work of Adam Sandler right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios, 7th floor of Tribune Tower. We are here live every Friday night into Saturday morning from midnight to 5 a.m. And at midnight, we do the midnight movie reviews, and then we kind of go off on a tangent. But we tell you all about the on-demand movies that you can watch in your house and all the movies that are out in the theaters. We reviewed all the new ones. We previewed the stuff that's coming up for next week's midnight movie reviews, as we always do. And one of the movies that we reviewed this week, or at least Eric and I reviewed, is the absolutely awful new Adam Sandler film, Grown Ups 2. And here's another thing about Grown Ups 2, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it's the only sequel he's made.
Yeah, that's stunning, isn't it?
Isn't that amazing that's the only... I mean, I thought we'd have at least 10 Happy Gilmores by this point.
Yeah. And here's the other thing I thought of during the movie, because next week The Conjuring's coming out, and it's rated R.
Yeah.
Okay? And we haven't seen the movie yet, but from what I understand, it's rated R basically because it's really, really scary.
Okay.
Okay, not because of language or nudity or, you know, gore or anything like that, just because it's really scary.
Okay.
Consider what happens in Grown Ups 2, and it gets a PG-13.
I know, man.
There is deer castration in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Guy is getting his package chewed on by a deer.
Yeah, it's
PG-13.
How long does it take before, Adam Sandler gets pee in his mouth in this movie?
2 minutes.
That's your basically your first joke in the movie. Here, is DP, a deer pee in Adam Sandler's mouth. It's a fantastic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's genius. All right, we're going to go down the list here, but we have some, I guess some people are calling in with some Adam Sandler thoughts. We are analyzing the work of Adam Sandler, 312-981-7200.
That's great. I don't have a screening to go to tomorrow morning. Let's talk about Adam Sandler.
Reno is in Joliet on WGN. Hi, Reno.
Hey, what's going on? Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on Death, My Boy? I like that movie a lot.
Really? Were you drinking when you watched it, Reno?
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
I'm not going to lie, guys.
All right. Well, if you were drinking, I can kind of see why maybe you liked it, but all right. Now, are there, Colin, besides Punch Drunk Love, is there anything that you like that he's done?
Not a whole lot. I've never, ever been a fan of this guy. I've hated him since Happy Gilmore. Since Billy Madison. I kind of like The Wedding Singer, kind of liked Anger Management, and that's about it. Of course, I love Punch Drunk Love, and I think he's very good in Funny People, and he's fine in Spanglish. I don't think Spanglish is a very good movie, but I think he's actually a good dramatic actor. I think he's a much better dramatic actor than a comedic actor.
Yeah.
It's just, you know... just not enough of that to go around. And, of course, nobody, you know, his dramatic movies, nobody ever goes to see, so he doesn't do them very often.
I remember I saw the screening of Punch Drunk Love. I was at the screening of Punch Drunk Love at the Lake Street Theater. And then I went to, and we all, I think we all went together to this.
The Music Box.
Yeah, the Music Box.
Music Box during the film festival.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I remember sitting in that theater beforehand, and we were all there. And we were sitting in the theater beforehand and noticing, I was looking around the crowd, and it looked like a lot of Adam Sandler fans. And it was about 15, 20 minutes into the movie when there was a sort of weird vibe in the theater. Like, what the hell is this?
Whoops.
Yeah.
I had the same experience when I went to the midnight show of Spanglish. That was the Thursday night before it opened. And I was in the theater to see a James L. Brooks movie. Clearly, everybody else was there to see an Adam Sandler movie about a wacky guy whose name is Spanglish.
Yeah.
And they were pretty bad.
All right, well, let me go down the list. Best to worst, according to Eric Childress. Punch Drunk Love is at the top of the list. I think everybody can agree on that. You put Funny People second. I'm not a fan. Spanglish is third. Happy Gilmore is fourth. Airheads. I like Airheads. I think Airheads is funny. I don't know if I necessarily consider that just an Adam Sandler vehicle.
No, but he's prominent enough that I included it.
Okay, I like that movie. I think that movie is really criminally underrated. I think there's some really funny stuff in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Gilmore I like very much. Wedding Singer I like. Billy Madison I like. Anger Management Parts I like. Mr. Deeds, I surprisingly enjoyed that movie. I didn't think I would, but I kind of liked it. Colin, I'm assuming you hate all these.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Big Daddy is next. I'm not a fan, really. 51st Dates, I found that movie just depressing.
Ugh. Yeah.
Rain Over Me. Click. Oh, God, I forgot about Click. Yeah. Oh, man. The Water Boy.
Make it worse.
The Water Boy. Grown Ups. Oh, my God. Zohan. Don't mess with the Zohan. Bedtime Stories. You think Bedtime Stories is worse than Zohan?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
There were a couple laughs in Zohan near the end.
The funniest part of Zohan is when Dave Matthews shows up. That's the only as a terrorist. That's the only time. Longest Yard. Oh, God. That's My Boy. That's the worst, in my opinion. Jack and Jill. Bulletproof. You think Bulletproof is worse than Jack and Jill?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, God. I forgot about Little Nicky. Oh, God, this guy's made a lot of bad movies. Just Go With It, and then, of course, the new Grown Ups 2. And then number one worst on the list would be I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Wow, quite an impressive filmography.
Isn't it, though?
Wow.
I had to make that list.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Proof that he sucks. there you go. All right. Well, what's he working on now? Do we get another one of these things? Is there anything in the...
I know he's doing a sequel to Transylvania.
That wasn't horrible.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't horrible. I thought that actually was really nicely animated. But also, here's another thing that we're not really mentioning. He produces, the Rob Schneider movies. He produced that movie with Swartzen, the Bucky porno.
Bucky Larson.
He produced that. Whenever you see the Happy Madison golf ball logo come up on the screen,
run.
That's pretty much it. All right. Eric, Colin, I'm sorry I kept you up late. I didn't realize the what's the kids movie that they're showing tomorrow?
I gotta go see Turbo tomorrow morning.
You're going to see Turbo.
I have to write something for it.
Enjoy Turbo. And is anyone going to see this on Tuesday night? Is anybody going to see the Kristen Wiig movie, or am I the only one?
I've seen it already.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I'm going to be seeing on the Tuesday, because Monday night, there's screenings on Monday, but Monday night I'm going to be watching the robot monster movie in 3D on the IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And I'll let you guys know what I think of it next week.
Okay.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. And good luck on watching Turbo tomorrow, Colin. And Eric, thanks, man. All right, there they are. That's Eric and Colin, and Eric's list. We're going to post Eric's list of Adam Sandler's movies, 25 movies from good to bad, and most of them being bad. It's astonishing that people go see this guy's movies. That really, and the latest one is as bad as it gets. It really is. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's time for the news on WGN.